Hello, welcome to episode 81 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
Unfortunately, we haven't got Retroid with us this week. However, you can find show notes for this episode at www.nerdassemble.co.uk, where you can comment. And don't forget, you can also tweet us via Nerds Podcast or find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Plus, don't forget, you can always ask us questions or comment on the show by email at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. But this time, what's happening other than that short survey, which we still want you lovely people to fill out if you get a chance.
And you not so lovely people as well.
Yeah. But what's happening this week, Paul?
Okay, this week, Fargo is heading to the small screen in April. Time to get back to the bare necessities as Bear Simulator Kickstarter campaign kicks off. Disney announced, among other things, The Incredibles 2. And our feature for today is, do audiences and the entertainment industry still have the time or money for mediocrity?
The first Fargo heading to the small screen this April. How about you listen to the trailer and then we'll talk about it.
What a day. If that was me, I would have killed that man. If you don't stand up to the boss, the wife, you're just gonna get washed away.
You okay there, Bill?
Wife made spaghetti for dinner.
Seemed a shame to barf it up.
Gambling problem, I heard.
You don't say.
I heard drugs.
I heard he like slept with a 13.
For Pete's sake, Bob, don't spread rumors. No, it was gambling.
I'm glad my husband's dead. I'm gonna sing at his funeral.
La 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 la.
It's a bit strange, huh?
You think this could be, like, an organized crime thing?
Give me the money!
Oh, I'm sorry. Scrunion?
I didn't do nothing. I just got home.
Fargo, an FX original series. Tuesday, April 15th.
So, as you might be able to, you know, kind of guess from, I know, the accents in the trailer, the strange sort of thoughtful speech patterns and whatnot, and the, you know, just really the title that it is based on the Coen brothers film of the same name. There's snow, there's dead bodies, or at least one dead body, and there's policemen and a community in shock. Sounds like Fargo.
Yeah.
Interesting.
This time it's set in a small North Dakota town. I can't remember if that was the case in the original. It's been so long since I watched it.
Yeah, it has been a really long time, actually.
We got it on DVD, but, you know, it's not something you re-watch frequently.
No.
In fact, that's the case with a lot of Coen brothers films.
Yeah.
Because they usually have kind of, like, twists and turns in them that you want to forget.
Yeah.
In between viewings.
It's not the kind of thing that you want to stick on annually, like Die Hard.
Yeah.
It's kind of our Christmas tradition.
Yeah. But the show's starting on FX in the US April 15th. So far, the cast list is looking quite tasty. There's in the trailer, you see a very beaten-up Martin Freeman.
Wow.
Billy Bob Thornton's in it.
Mm.
It's got Alison Tolman, Colin Hanks, Kate Walsh, and I can't pronounce Bob's surname.
Bob Odenkirk.
But basically, the main... There's not much plot given away so far for the series, but basically someone's been murdered.
Mm.
He was a member of this small North Dakotan community. The community is, in theory, mourning this individual's death, but there's a whole hint going on that maybe there's a link to organised crime somewhere in the background.
Well, I mean, I think if it's got to work as kind of Fargo, then it's kind of got to follow on from a lot of the sensibilities of the Coen brothers' original film.
Makes sense.
And, you know, Coen brothers seem to be famous for basically having all of these, like, different strands and elements kind of interacting with each other in, like, you know, really, really bizarre kind of ways, and nobody knowing what the hell is going on.
I have to admit, I haven't caught how long this series is, but I can't imagine, due to its nature, being something like a 20-parter. I'm thinking this is probably even more of a 6-parter or a 12-parter.
I should imagine it'll be a 12-parter.
Do you think?
I don't think Americans usually go for 6-parters.
It might follow True Detective being 8-10 episodes.
This seems to be
a nice format going at the moment, that sort of thing.
You caught True Detective, by the way? Because we haven't.
Oh, yes.
Without spoiling it too much, is it any good?
Let's just say Matthew McConaughey is fantabadozy in it. He is fucking solid. It's really enjoyable, very twisted. It's good.
Okay. That's quite an endorsement.
We've been watching every Saturday. Without fail.
So, I mean, going back to the cast list, it is looking like it's got quite a few, you know, stars. I mean, I'm surprised about Billy Bob Thornton in there, because he usually, you know, is restricted to kind of restricted. He obviously does mostly movies, so...
You can say that a lot about shows at the moment, though, can't you? Because you've got Kevin Bacon in The Following. You've got Matthew McConaughey and Rudy Harrelson in True Detective. They all seem to be moving towards the TV.
Yeah, from film movies. To TV.
Well, mind you, you say moving, but then I suppose it's the whether or not they want to have a more regular income for a bit versus having a one-off payment and or royalties sort of situation. Yeah. So it depends, I suppose, what kind of work fits in with their life.
That's very true.
Absolutely.
Because also, and also the advantage usually of a TV series that you do tend to stick around roughly once the area, unless of course you're like a random episode of the first seasons of the X-Files, where yes, everything starts off in, was it Vancouver, where they used to film, and then they ended up in some forest somewhere in the middle of one state that was wet, cold, muddy, and horrible for most of the recording for the episode. Everyone ended up incredibly worn down and begrudging of the entire situation. That was
damn you, Chris Carter.
Oh, which episode? There was the one with the insects in the woods. But it was pretty nasty. No offense, but
as you've kind of noted, there are, you know, a lot of episodes that seem to kind of be very, very similar. So
that's one of the ones that isn't, is it? I think it's like Into Darkness or something like that. But it was one of the most standout episodes of season one, at least in terms of the plot. Whole bunch of lumberjacks go missing.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm not okay.
He's very much not okay. They're very much dead, basically. It's sort of realized.
I'm a lumberjack. I'm a lumberjack and I'm dead.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite have the same, you know, catchiness.
I suppose there is one thing that disappoints me with the fact that Fargo's heading to the small screen, is the fact that in a way it's another crime drama. And while we've just had Cookie praising True Detective, if there's one genre that's maybe a tad oversaturated, other than American sitcoms, it's crime drama. Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, saying that though, I think I've got more into crime dramas recently, but only like the special ones. So, like, not like CSI or anything like that, but stuff like Numbers or Castle.
Yeah.
You know,
Numbers is good.
Yeah.
That just reminds me. I can't remember if it was BBC4 or Morpher, probably BBC4, but they've picked up another, like, Scandinavian or whatever crime drama, bleakness, lots of dull colour.
I like that they're picking up stuff that isn't necessarily just kind of British or, you know, English speaking. But I think they should probably actually have a dedicated channel to it.
Yep. There are a couple there already.
What, dedicated channel to?
Well, pretty much. I'm pretty sure there is.
Alibi?
Yeah.
That's the crime drama, isn't it?
Oh, no, I don't mean dedicated channel to crime dramas or anything. Mm. I mean dedicated channel to, say, for example, European stuff that I've actually got in.
I don't think there's enough of it, because the issue is that, like, there's a lot of European crime dramas out there that we're not aware of. The issue is whether or not there's enough of them being at least subtitled.
Yeah, that's true.
Because obviously, if it hasn't been subtitled, it might be like somebody, like one of our channels, they're like, oh, actually, we would like to pick this up, you know, and subtitle it and put it out. Though, as Paul and I have been finding recently, translators on certain entertainment products really should put more effort in if they possibly could. started trying to play Final Fantasy Lightning Returns over the weekend in between other games. And the Japanese, like the translation from the Japanese, is clearly not quite right, because they've already established that there's like a at least a dual deity situation going on. Like there's at least two gods, or god and a goddess, but they keep referring to, they keep using the word god in the translation, that it means there's only one god, there's no other gods. Like, God said this and God said that. And it's like, well, you only say that if you're someone who believes there's only one God, but they're in a situation where they believe there's two.
Yeah, polytheistic religions obviously separate the names of gods. Yeah. They call them by their actual names rather than God.
Or if you're going to use to say God, you would, you wouldn't just say God, you would say the God.
Yeah.
Basically.
Like, the God of Thunder. Raiden.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. But yeah, the translation sounds appalling. I mean, the voice acting's reasonable, but the actual... But I feel sorry for the actors trying to get their tongues around stuff that actually, when you think about it, is quite illogical in English. But
there again, I'd imagine that you wouldn't necessarily do the, well, kind of voiceover work in, you know, kind of chronological order necessarily in kind of RPGs like that. So it might be that, you know, the whole process could be, you know, usually haywire anyway.
But you know what? Shouldn't have this problem with Fargo.
Nope, shouldn't.
That, oh, I'm going to move us on now to our next story.
That was the moving on point.
Yeah.
Finding all this talent going from movies to TV shows is because of the quality of the writing nowadays in TV shows and the actual amount that they're spending on it.
True.
But you know what? It's time to get back to the bare necessities.
Hey, boo-boo!
I really think it is, as the Kickstarter campaign for Bear Simulator reaches its funding goal in super fast time. Like, it launched last week. I believe their funding goal was around $29,000 within less than a week. When I looked, whilst I was writing, obviously, the outline to this week's show, they surpassed $33,000, and there's, you know, more than 25 days left sort of deal, so they're probably continue well on the way. But I think...
Presumably when they say be a bear, they mean be the animal a bear.
Yes.
And
yes.
Not be...
And not that subculture, no.
That subculture.
That subculture.
Oh, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Yes, I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure if our listeners do, but I know what you're talking about.
Listeners, are you a cub?
Oi!
Just kidding. Of course they're a cub.
Oh, God.
How to alienate your listeners in one single word.
Not that we disrespect the lifestyle choices of these groups. You know. It's all right.
You see, that sounded so... Yeah. Throw away apologies, I think.
I know, but that's because you're the one that was trying to make really bad puns at their expense.
Well, it's not necessarily at their expense.
I don't know.
If you want to hurt somebody, it's Paul, because he's the one who's done the bad pun.
There we go.
There you go.
There we go.
Back onto the Bear Simulator.
Yeah, back onto Bear Simulator. It's coming from Farjay Studios, who are based in Portland, Oregon. And it is... literally a game where you play as a bear doing bear things. Now, I think this is probably a Kickstarter campaign that's had some of the most imaginative writing on the campaign page ever. I feel that I need to read this to you lovely people. Explore, eat stuff, be a bear. There's been a disturbing trend in games of late. Just look at this chart, and there's this like basically this chart that's like loads of modern games, and there's clearly no bears in any of them. Anyway, notice something? Sure, these games are popular, and you might even call them fun, but they harbour a horrible bias in today's gaming world. Most are blind to it, but it's all right there. That's right, none of these games has you playing as a bear. It's quite clear the fat cats in Washington with their stovetop hats and contemporary jazz music don't want us playing as bears. It's about time to fight back against the tyranny. The title gives you all you need to know, as it's pretty much a bear simulator. You play in FBB, first person bear, and do bear things, which include exploring, eating fish and plants, striking down anything that dares stand before your might, increasing your stats, sleeping, and discovering mysteries of your forest home. Watch the alpha trailer all right, you know, so they got a trailer. But basically, the final line for the main description is, TLDR, it's like a mini Skyrim, but you're a bear.
Now, can I just say that off the top of my head, I can name at least one game that you can play as a bear.
Angry Bear.
What?
There was that game, Angry Bear, where you had a chainsaw and stuff and you killed other bears because you didn't get invited to their party.
I was thinking Tekken.
Not just Tekken, but Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, very, very true.
But, to be fair, they said there's been a disturbing trend in games of late.
Angry Bear didn't do very well, did it? Because it was a bit crap.
The, you know, Angry Bear.
It was a bit twisted as well.
Oh. There's been games about teddy bears, but no games about.
Oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. No
bears. Yeah,
bears.
Bears.
Do you get to knit picnic baskets then?
I don't know, because I haven't had a chance to fully look at the trailer, but I'm not sure. There's definitely a chance to go fishing. One of the rewards if you pledge is you get an exclusive in-game item, which is a pair of sunglasses.
I was kind of hoping that he was going to say, and you get a bear sent to you.
If you pledge $10,000 to this Kickstarter, you will be sent through airmail your own grizzly to keep in your back garden. I wouldn't want to deal with a grizzly that's been sent through airmail. It'll be grizzlier than usual.
You wouldn't have it delivered to your address, would you?
Yeah, you would have it delivered to your worst enemy's address.
I donate on behalf of...
Well, that's the thing, because you have to give your address each time for Kickstarter, so you could just be like, when they do like this survey thing for how you want to get your rewards to you, and it's just like... Yes, so I've pledged the $10,000 for, you know, the bear perk level. I'm going to send the bear to my worst enemy.
This actually sounds pretty good. Does anybody know the address of the EA Studios?
Oh, come on. They keep getting it in the...
Yeah, and for very good reason.
But I suppose they are perhaps, you know... partially responsible for the worrying trend of having a lack of bears in games. Meanwhile, Bethesda should obviously be praised for at least the inclusion of non-playable bears in Skyrim.
I'm going to shock you now.
Oh God.
I don't really care for Bethesda that much.
To be fair, they do have this habit of releasing buggy things. And they did steal a Saturday from me in the recent months. They stole the Saturday from me. Unfortunately, it was prior to certain restrictions being lifted, so I can't talk about it. But they stole the Saturday.
You abducted or something?
It felt like it. But I was still in my living room.
You know what you should do? Set a bear on them.
So that means I have to send the bear... Do I have to send the bear to myself, or do then I say that it's EA giving the pledge of... for the highest non-existent perk.
You say it's EA just in case they try and find out your real address.
Mm.
Be like, we want to give you this bear, come on.
Do you know what? I think we're going to move on now.
Yeah, I think it's best.
Disney, during a investors meeting last week, announced The Incredibles 2 is on its way. I was expecting cheers at this point. I was expecting cheers, considering how much you like The Incredibles.
Yes.
You seem very calm.
I can contain myself, except for when it comes to bears.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Cars 3 is also being worked on. Cars 3 is also being worked on.
Hey, that's not too bad. Cars was good.
Cars 2 was appalling. Planes was appalling. I really think they need to stop making...
I haven't seen Planes yet.
I've seen bits of it. I don't want to go near it.
Cars was awesome, though.
It was not.
I've never seen it. It's never really piqued my interest.
I'm not Buzz Lightyear. Steve McQueen.
I found it derivative and boring as heck. And I really wish my little brother had not been given it on DVD and went through this one stage of watching it almost every day. And so every time that I popped round to my parents, he was through some stage of watching Cars. And then the same happened with the sequel. And again, I think it's an awful film.
Cars 2 was weak, to be fair.
I've had the same thing happen to me with like Monsters Inc. for the first film.
Hey, and Monsters Inc. cool.
Yeah, that's fine. You know what? Because it's actually a good film. But seeing the disjointed, blubbering mess of the first two Cars films proves to me neither are good films, because even if you watch them disjointed, they just seem so boring.
But The Incredibles 2 is going to rock.
Yeah, The Incredibles 2 is going to rock. It's going to be fine.
Have you noticed how there's actually a trend of like adults liking kids' films?
That's because they have to put some content in the films that doesn't send parents to sleep and actually keeps them awake, or else they'll lose attention, fall asleep in the cinema. The kids will realise this, break forth from the cinema because they're not actually that interested in the film, and then cause to raise merry havoc upon the city in which they're visiting, or town.
I remember going to the cinema to see Shrek with my kids, and I was laughing more than the kids.
Emily, are you seriously saying that they deliberately stick in enough to keep the adults interested and entertained as to make sure that there's not a nationwide spillage of kids onto the streets who then cause absolute mayhem?
That is why they have interesting bits in kids' films. If they didn't, it would be it'd be hell on earth.
Scooby-Doo didn't.
Yeah, but that was the, you know, and I'm pretty sure there was like a series of
toddler
orientated or under 10-year-old orientated crimes after the release of both. Was it? Did they manage two films? They didn't manage a third, did they? The live action.
Yeah, they did.
Oh god.
I couldn't just imagine a kid cursing the scriptwriters. Would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for you pesky screenwriters making things entertaining for adults.
Do you know what's annoying about the first Scooby-Doo film? It's appalling, but the soundtrack's alright. It's a horrible, bizarre mix of, it's not too bad for a pop soundtrack, but then you try to, but then it brings back flashbacks of the movie, and then it's not so great.
To be fair, there are films out there that suffer from basically having an uneven skill level in, you know, its in its content. So you'll get some actors that are absolutely brilliant that work with a crap script, but with brilliant, you know, kind of, set designs and, you know, photography and stuff like that, and, you know, really, really bad, you know, script writers and stuff. So, yeah.
The reassuring thing about The Incredibles 2 so far is that Brad Bird, who was the director of the first film, is working on the script.
Yay!
So there's, you know, some continuity going on. No word on where or when it takes place after the second one. I'm kind of hoping that, oh, what was the name of the daughter?
Violet.
I'm kind of hoping that she's maybe, that they're going to leave it long enough that she might actually have started high school. I want them to have actually allowed the kids to age a bit.
Actually, I think
rather than doing the Simpsons.
I think I heard somewhere that, you know, whenever there's like a, you know, kind of a depiction on TV or on the big screen of a family and like one of the kids is a goth, it's always the girl.
That was me that said it.
Yeah.
That's an observation I made. It just seemed, I can't be the only one who's ever noticed it. Surely, that any time there's pretty much a goth in a family grouping, it's usually the girl, it's usually the daughter rather than the son. Anybody else notice this?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I think personally, though, it was Beetlejuice that established this. Or rather, Tim Burton, unfortunately, did. And it has continued since. Tim Burton has a lot to answer for. He will one day pay for his crimes.
Even the Addams Family. Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday is far more goth.
Than Pugsley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Far more goth.
But then in the Addams Family, she was always a bit more like that in the original TV series as well.
I'm trying, who else is... Oh, there's an ad for some holidays thing at the moment, and it's a family group, and there's like a couple of kids, and the daughter is a goth. It's like, okay. I can't remember the last time I saw a family grouping with a guy as a goth. Really can't.
I think at one point Home and Away did, like, and this is like over a decade ago since I actually was watching it, so.
Yeah. Do you want to hear some other interesting news that came out?
I think his name was Edward, actually. come to think of it.
Does anyone want to hear some other interesting news that came out from the investors' meeting?
Okay, go for it.
They revealed that Star Wars Episode 7 will be taking place 30 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yay?
Yeah, it'll have the twins.
Is this based on what happened in subsequent fiction?
Actual novels that are going on.
Mm. Mind you, I'm pretty sure...
It's two Skywalker twins.
Okay. I'm pretty sure, though, that they've had people in who had quite a vast knowledge of the canon, kind of picking and choosing stuff to make part of the film canon from all of this.
Yeah, but you know
Which
what
I really
mean.
Hope they follow, because some of that is really good stuff.
But you know what that'll mean?
What?
Is that there's still going to be hardcore fans out there that would be like, no, this isn't canon because of this and this. You can never please everybody, even with experts in the field of Star Wars.
Okay, well, other than obviously kind of either being amused or appalled by this week's news, has anyone been doing anything cool, playing anything cool, watching anything cool, reading anything cool? Cookie has. Cookie, what is it? What have you been doing?
I've become addicted to watching The Musketeers on the BBC.
Oh my.
Mm. Obviously based on, I can't remember his name.
Alexander Dumas?
Yeah.
That's the one, yep. Alexandre Dumas. It's been quite interesting to see how the BBC have approached it. It's a lot better quality than Atlantis was.
Good.
Which is a lot.
Has Atlantis been cancelled?
Or is it just? I think it's just not renewed. In between seasons.
No. I watched it to find out the whole mystery behind Jason. If I'm honest, I found out the mystery and read, "Was that it? Oh bollocks."
I think
it's been a lot more fresh with the Musketeers, and they've added a few extra elements and spun little things out of it, which was quite nice. And it's actually proven to be a worthwhile series to watch.
One thing about the Musketeers, though, is that it's not like there isn't enough source material. It's a very long series, because Dumas was like Dickens. He'd write more and more of something if he thought he could get money out of it, because it tended to be published in magazines first.
It's kind of what happens nowadays. That's where you get sequel after sequel after sequel.
Almost, but at least there tends to be a winding down if you're not quite sure there's going to be a sequel, whereas with like the sort of magazine situation that used to happen during the 1900s, no, not 1800s, 1800s, sorry, it'd be like, I need more money, okay, I'm just going to extend this, and you just get bits of when it's collected into books, obviously, that actually are quite pointless because they just tried to draw things out so they could get more money from magazines sales. So yeah, but I watched the first episode of the new BBC Musketeer series. I thought it was quite good, but I've been kind of saving that on my Digibox recorder to watch.
Been saving a couple of things on the Digibox recorder to watch.
The last one next week.
Okay, well then I'll be able to catch up with Vaughan and go
I believe it might have already been renewed for a second season.
Okay.
Do you have a particular favourite musketeer, Cookie?
Oh, I've always had a favourite musketeer. It was always Athos. His moody grumpiness played well to me. Yeah. And he's an excellent swordsman. What more could you ask for?
Are they all meant to be excellent swordsmen?
Yeah, but how many of them can do it was drunk?
Athos is the best one.
So how many of them can actually sword fight whilst drunk?
Exactly. But I just think there's a bit more mystery with Athos, with his relationship with Lady De Winter and that sort of thing as well, isn't there? Always has been. Sort of like a tormented heart. Bless him.
So, Paul, what have you been...
I have been playing through, inspired by your going through Final Fantasy 13-2.
Mm.
I've been playing the original Final Fantasy 13.
You wrote a thing about it for Hex last week,
Did, yes. And
this time, then.
Sorry?
How did you get on with it this time, then?
I'm not entirely sure whether I just forgot most of it or what, but it seemed to make more sense.
You didn't understand it the first time.
Yeah, well, I suppose with both Final Fantasy and Kingdom Hearts series, you generally tend to get more out of it like on the second and third kind of playthrough. Mm. So you kind of generally tend to understand the world a bit better. But I think one of the problems with the storytelling in Final Fantasy 13 is that you don't have somebody that doesn't know what's going on. So say, for example, with Final Fantasy X, you're kind of plunged into this world with magic and whatnot. But your avatar, as it were, is Tidus, who has been plucked from his, you know, time or whatever
existence
and been put there as well. So you're kind of seeing the world firsthand through his eyes as well. And you don't really get that with Final Fantasy XIII, which means that when they reference certain things like, about the Lassies and, Falsies and all that, you don't get it.
Meanwhile, they have this
because it's not really explained to you.
They've got this huge bit of stuff that's slowly recorded. Is it the data log or whatever? The thing the menu. And it's just a pain in the ass to read through it. Like, if you're going to have any sort of exposition in a game you explain what the frill's going on, you should do it in a way that doesn't detract from the actual playing of the game and experiencing the game. If you've got to sit there and read pages upon pages of text on a television screen for several hours just to get maybe a slightly better understanding of what the heck's going on, that's not good design.
And I have to say, I have noted that while Final Fantasy XIII is obviously very linear throughout most of the game, in comparison, Final Fantasy XIII 2 kind of jumps around a lot, and Final Fantasy Lightning Returns is kind of so open and widespread that it's just kind of ridiculous.
On a brief note on Final Fantasy Lightning Returns, I am unimpressed so far. Not just due to translation issues.
But I think one of the things about the Final Fantasy XIII series is that the battle systems are actually surprisingly good in general.
I've warmed to them more than when I originally played like 13. Yeah. But I'm still not 100% happy with them.
No, I mean, with Final Fantasy XIII, it's more about the dynamics between the characters. And actually, one of the things that I have noted with the characters in the story is that even though, it's kind of made out that Lightning's the protagonist of it, and to a certain extent she is, but each person is there in your party for a specific reason. It's not just, this guy, wanted to come along, so I allowed him to. Or, I've got no home, so I'll just, come along with you. There's nothing like that there.
Meanwhile, I'm going to talk about Ingress, which is what I decided to play a whole load of yesterday. And it's actually a game pretty much, I think, by a part of Google. And it's a geolocation game on your Android smartphone. And basically parts of your world, your actual world, the place you really live in real life, in theory, could have bits of it mapped to this game.
I'm kidding. I don't live on Facebook. Hard to go there.
I'll draw this for the game.
Sorry, carry on.
It's a slightly complicated game, Ingress. And basically, there's two sides in the game. There's the Resistance and the Enlightened. And basically, the story is based around that, like so many things lately, stuff was discovered with the Large Hadron Collider. There's stuff being this weird type of matter that isn't a boson and basically enables you to do weird stuff with technology, and the Enlightened want to use it to help mould humanity closer to essentially to a cybernetic existence. Meanwhile, the Resistance are quite opposed to this. Me, having experienced the endings of Mass Effect 3, decided that I wanted to be on the Resistance. And then when I started playing the game, I realised that pretty much my entire local area has been taken over by the Enlightened, who've colonised the area first. Well, you say that, but then there'd be nothing for me to do if I'd chosen the same side.
Can I just say that this game sounds like something that Jane McGonagall would actually come up with?
Quite possibly, yeah. But I want more people locally to play it in Cornwall because, quite frankly, we can't let the Enlightened take over the entire county. I'm sorry, but we're just not meant to be that much one with machine. Unfortunately, it does use up a lot of the battery life and phone, especially you're using up to your 3G signal to carry data between it and the app. Plus, you've got your GPS on. And in a way, if you don't quite know where something is, you'll also have the screen on as well, and hopefully have an earphone in as it reads out instructions to you to get to like the next location. You get to a location that's already been registered in the game, because you can submit locations, and then you try to claim them for whichever side you're on. And if you're on an opposing side, you'll hack them and sort of like, you know, just kind of try to take over an area, and it can take more than one attempt. If you're just one resistance member in an entire area of Enlightened, it takes a very long time to take anything over. In fact, I seriously, Cornwall, I need your help, because the Enlightened, they have taken over.
Is this a call to arms?
This is a call to arms.
And to phones.
And to phones. Vive la Revolution. But it's only on Android. So far. Because it's a Google project, so, you know.
Mm. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. But basically, the locations that you can have as part of it are normally, obviously, buildings of historical sort of significant interest. Obviously, got like a clear architectural style going on. Artwork. Artistic graffiti, cool. And basically you turn those into sort of locations for your side, and then obviously you try to claim them, and obviously if you're the opposing side, you try to take them away by attacking them.
Sounds control points from Team Fortress 2.
It is a lot like it, yeah.
But a lot like it, only less explosives and less weaponry. It's based
in the real world, and you can end up walking several kilometres in a morning trying to take over these points. I managed to build one point. Somebody had registered part of True Cathedral. Actually, True Cathedral's got several points on it because it's so big and got such varied architecture around the outside because it was built in so many different stages. That there was this one point which obviously someone had submitted. They hadn't, from the Enlightened side, because there's none of the one from the Resistance playing in the area at the moment, and they hadn't claimed it. So I quickly got in there yesterday and claimed it for the Resistance. So this was like one point of Resistance, which I'm not sure yet if it's still there, because I don't get to go into the centre of town that often. So yeah, they may have taken over already.
Cool.
The other way, just like, yeah, that's fine. It's cool.
I'll leave a link on the site if you're at all interested in this.
No, I might have to have a look at that later.
Yeah. But time for our feature.
Oh, so, no.
As we said earlier, we're asking, do audiences and the entertainment industry still have the time or money for mediocrity?
No.
I just want this is in response, or has been sort of like generated by a tweet British Gaming, aka Mark Brown, posted on Twitter last week, saying that with this new generation of video games consoles, people can't afford to put money towards a game that might be less than awesome on launch. Like, you can't just think, you know what, I've got some cash, but it's payday or whatever. I'm gonna pick up this game. I wasn't gonna think of picking up.
Yeah, I think he might have a valid point there, because I mean, they are, how much are the next gen games at the moment?
Is it 55 quid or something?
It's over 50.
Well, I know if you shop around, you can get them cheaper than that. But to be fair, it is quite.
It's certainly nothing south of 40, normally.
It is quite alarming sometimes when you think about it. I mean, from an old geezer like me, I used to be able to go and pick up a Amstrad CPC game. I don't know, this is going back a few years, but I used to go into my local paper shop after my paper round, and I'd be able to pick up the latest sort of Dizzy the Egg for $4.99.
Love those games.
You know, they were really good fun, and they were great. And I know, obviously, production has gone up, and the amount of money that's going into it has quadrupled since then.
The amount spent on marketing has risen by dizzying amounts,
yeah. And
she would, you know,
£50, fair enough, for a game of really good quality, I can live with. But if I was to go out and buy something, and I got home and I put it in, and I spent the next 2 minutes crying because it was just pants.
Do you know what?
What certain people did with Thief.
Well, I mean, because poor David Osborne, from, he writes for us on Hex Dimension, he bought Thief on launch for PS4, and within 3 hours of playing it, he'd listed it on eBay. He was, and this was, you know, a launch. He bought it on launch.
I was looking forward to playing that as well myself. I was, you know, I was looking forward. I was probably going to pick it up for this current gen because I haven't bought a next gen yet because I haven't had the money. But I was really considering buying Thief, and then I went on Twitter on launch day and saw how many people had actually returned it or, you know, traded it in. I was just like, whoa, what's going on here?
And I think to a certain extent, from a philosophical perspective, I think we should try and make time and money for mediocrity, because in the end, if you kind of rely on basically just buying the best games out there, or you know, even the best films or series or whatever, then you're really going to be relying on a few factors, including whether you've actually played previous games of that kind of ilk before. And second of all, you're going to be listening to, you know, kind of reviews and people, you know, online that may have, you know, axes to grind, or, you know, even...
I think, even though...
It is down to personal preference at the end of the day.
Even though I've only watched the Catwoman film once, I do believe that everyone needs to watch that film, if not something similarly awful, just to get an understanding of how bad something could be, so that you can understand what's good, or at least okay, and actually, when you don't worry about too much, it's kind of palatable. But obviously the issue here is that in order to experience these things, not only does it potentially cost money, unless of course you've unfortunately caught Catwoman being repeated on ITV2 for the umpteenth time,
or it's on Netflix,
or it's on Netflix. I don't think it is. So I think that crowd's safe. Yeah, there might be a crowd.
Netflix just turned around and said, "No, no, Catwoman, go away."
Lick we get rid of stuff else. Below zero stars.
but it's the time issue, because obviously it takes time to experience these things, not just money.
I think it's easier to kind of sit through a bad film than it is to sit through a bad game, because obviously
the
time investment in a bad game, especially if it doesn't actually pay off at the
end. I think the issue for something like a bad game is, like, it's when there's critical failure on more than one front. So if the story isn't good, the actual way in which you try to play the thing is really poorly worked out.
Or buggy.
And buggy and stuff. If you get failures on those two fronts, there's no chance that even if it picks up at a later point that you're really going to stick with it.
Yeah.
Like, was it I tried playing before Christmas, was it Dark?
Oh, was that the vampire one?
Yes. It was like this random game that was released last year, which kind of reminded me of the Darkness games. But was absolutely poor. Like, it was really buggy. The mechanics, well, you know, like the way you had all these powers and abilities and stuff in order to use them didn't really work that well. And sometimes it would seem like you were incredibly overpowered, and then other times, and this was early on in the game as well, I didn't get that far. I played maybe 5 hours on it. And you just couldn't do things, even though logically you could. Do something that was completely illogical, like warp from, I don't know, between two different floors through this one particular spot, bypass a whole load of enemies. But it was just this one really, really specific, like, they clearly hadn't put that there on purpose. And it made me appreciate that perhaps other games just aren't so bad. Of course, as I've previously lamented, seriously, Ghostbusters on the DS, one of the worst games in existence, purely because you can't play it.
Well, there was a similar game I had, I got off the 360, which not many people heard of. The Knights Templar, and it's that bad I can't remember the title now. But it was quite interesting because you were a fallen knight and you were travelling between. You're sort of fighting between the Crusades, but also you're travelling to hell and trying to escape death. So it was quite interesting in that perspective. Until you actually try to play it. The first stumbling block was about 20 minutes in when I first met Death and I had to do a quick time event. And it took me an hour to get frustrated and throw the pad at the wall because no matter how many times I pressed the button it was highlighting, the damn thing wouldn't work.
I think you had a bit of a game-breaking bug with Assassin's Creed 3, didn't you?
There was a situation very early on involving shooting some people. Well, once I got over to North America, and regardless of how I tried to do things, it wouldn't let me shoot. So I gave up at that point. I have never completed Assassin's Creed 3, though to be fair, it's perhaps the most lambasted part of the entire series.
To be fair with this game, I actually managed to get past this bit eventually after a week of trawling the internet, going on forums and seeing that other people who bought it were having the same problems and waiting for somebody to actually figure out how to activate the Krypton properly.
Wow. But see, this is the thing, like, not only aren't games expensive, but as we're seeing, the time aspect is immense if it is a bad game, and it's just like, it's that balance. Like, there has to be something else for you to look forward to. So I would say, like, for instance, everyone's always been like the way you shoot in Spec Ops The Line. It's a third-person shooter, and it's pretty bad for, like, trying to control your characters and trying to shoot at enemies and stuff. But that was because that wasn't the main point of the game. But if you couldn't see past that mechanic issue, then you would miss out on this huge, really deep story.
Yeah,
that was taking place. So with this superficially, it wasn't game breaking. It just made things frustrating. Mm. But you could still get through things, and you could also raise and lower the difficulty whenever you wanted. But that would affect achievements.
Yeah,
I think also do audiences and the entertainment industry still have time for money or mediocrity? When it comes to Steam sales, that theory kind of flies out the window.
I think it's not really about what we're talking about here. I think the main issue is, should we not be actually given should there not be a standard that all media should try and achieve for the money and time investment?
You would
a value rating type thing.
You'd have thought that they would have perhaps put a bit more effort into the mechanics to make sure that they weren't, that they weren't scorned for this silly mechanic or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There is an issue. I think it depends on how long the project's been in development. Mm. Like, for instance, what happened with Aliens Colonial Marines last year.
Yeah, or Duke Nukem. Projects that have been in for development for too long.
To be fair, Aliens Colonial Marines and Duke Nukem are there's two different reasons why there was problems with that. Mm. And Aliens Colonial Marines, it'd been going on for so long, they've been put back for so long, people have been moved around and moved off so much that they were obliged to get something out. And this is the problem. Like, if you've got a project where there's maybe particular time-limited funding or you're on pressure to deliver by a certain point, which you haven't been able to sort of change, even though it's unrealistic, whatever.
Yeah, it happens in films as well. I mean, yeah. Jaws is famous for it.
I always get the suspicion that From Dusk Till Dawn 2 was only made because somebody's like, we've got to make it now or we're never going to make it, and it's an appalling horror film. It's an appalling film. I'm still not sure if it's quite Catwoman levels, but you know. But there's always this, a lot of times you have to do it after or by a certain point, and because of this kind of push, that's when we end up with stuff that either is borderline okay or it's just really, really bad. And I think if there isn't a chance for at least to get to something where it's kind of like, yeah, that's okay, that people can at least appreciate a bit, and maybe some kind of cult following kind of, I mean, because think about the amount of films out there that have got cult followings that actually, when you think about them as films, they're not necessarily that good. There's a lot of films out there that are like that.
I get what you're saying, but Transformers 2 and 3, that presumably had a lot of money thrown at it. I didn't hear anything about it being, forced out before it was ready. I mean, Origins Wolverine was, obviously, because, you know, the main footage was leaked.
Yeah.
And so they had to rush to do the visual effects.
Oh, that's some of the worst VFX in the last 10 years is on that film.
Yeah.
Like, for mainstream. Where he's
playing about with the claws, and it's like...
Just the wrong colour, and there's, like, almost the wrong texture, and it's just, oh. But if we sort of, if it, stuff isn't pushed out once the consumer gets their hands on it, and if even if they've got it in a sale, I mean, suppose in theory they can't complain if they've managed to get it cheap. They've managed to pay full price.
I mean, that's the kind of downside to digital retail in a way. If you're kind of paying full price for a digital product, you can't sell it on.
But you know what? It was just slightly off topic, but still related to this whole cost issue. It was announced in last week's budget. It wasn't majorly publicised, but there was a corner in last week's budget which says that all digital entertainment will now, from, I assume, the new tax year, I think, half or even tax year next year, have to be sold at UK VAT rates. Rather than the more favourable VAT rates, which are in Luxembourg, where a lot of companies have got their digital sort of side to things kind of based. So the price, in theory, the prices of things like Steam games over here, ebooks, DLC for the consoles, stuff on Play for like Google or like the App Store for Apple, you know, stuff like that, the prices could actually go up. So, and it's to the full 20% VAT rate as well.
Ooh, blimey.
I still don't like the fact that ebooks are charged full VAT over here when physical isn't. But this is partially because I think the reason we've never pushed this is because basically, actually, in a lot of other European countries, it's EU law that you have to charge full VAT on books.
All right.
But it's one of those things where we sort of kind of tried to weasel our way out of, basically. It's us and like only a handful of other countries, but we can't do anything else with the regs around it, because if we try to push it, they'll be like, right, no, you're going to have to start paying full VAT on everything, and in theory it could cripple our entire publishing industry.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, oh, do you know what? Mediocre films and going to the cinema. It's a far more expensive experience normally. Yes, if there's more than one of you, it's a far more expensive experience than getting a DVD.
Yeah.
And if it's a iffy film, that's not so fab.
I
feel sorry for those people who saw Catwoman in the cinema. I feel sorry for you guys.
I like popcorn, especially salted popcorn, so I'm cool with the popcorn. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, what I'm watching in front of me. Although, to a certain extent, if you're actually on a date with somebody, it can work in your favour. Because, you know, if you're watching a crap film, your date's going to be, this film's crap. Hey, shall we do something?
Oh. I feel like...
So, just for clarity, I'm not advocating doing anything dodgy in any cinemas.
Or any you public space. You will get space. Thrown out. Or any public space.
You will get thrown out and you can't blame us.
I do feel like I had an excessive amount of my existence taken away from me by sort of like Attack of the Clones.
Excessive amount of existence.
Yeah. I feel like I had years drained off of my expectant lifetime.
Are you trying to... Oh, right. Your expectant lifetime. So if you would have lived to 100 years, then you've been cut down to 75.
Something ridiculous like that. Yeah. Well,
60?
Maybe.
55?
It felt so draining. It was such a draining experience, and it was just so boring. It's not like a really, really good film. It is truly a mediocre film.
I liked the bit with the Jedi battles in the arena and like lightsabers going off in the distance and Yoda fighting.
That was it.
Although that really didn't make sense. I was just kind of giggling in the cinema as, you know, Yoda was kind of jumping around the place, and it's like, what? So you're that sprightly, but you use a walking stick.
I think...
Of course, you have to be, you know... It's always the rare for our deception.
I suppose going back to kind of the subject discussion, I suppose it's really more of a risk for video games than any other entertainment product, the sort of mediocrity. I think perhaps people have sort of maybe sometimes too high expectations with certain games, but I think if it kind of... If it fails on, like, at least the way it makes you kind of attracted to the game for either narrative or a scoring system or something. A goal that isn't necessarily the chance of physically playing it, you know, moving your hands around a keyboard or a gamepad or something. If it fails on that front, and then it obviously fails on the controls front, then it truly is a bad game, and it's worse than mediocre. Like if it fails on one of those fronts,
yeah,
it's mediocre. If it fails on both of those fronts, it's worse than mediocre.
Well, I mean, it's a bit like Dara Bean once did a skit about the difference between games and like films and like art and stuff like that. It's basically when you're kind of coming across a painting or, you know, kind of watching a film, you don't have to be good at it. You just have to watch. It's passive. Whereas video games, you have to actually be good at it or get good at it in order to progress. So, you know, if you're stuck at a certain point and, you know, you're not learning anything, you're not leveling up and you're stuck. You can't get any further. So I think to a certain extent, when it comes to broken controls or game-breaking bugs, that is so much more detrimental in video games than it is to films. Because with a boring film, you can get to the end. You can watch it and you can go, that was a load of rubbish, chuck the DVD in the bin. But you can't actually get to get to the end of a broken game.
If you leave at a point of watching a film in the cinema, at a point where it's kind of not taking the piss, if you leave and you demand your money back, you get your money back as
like
well.
The credits.
Yeah, don't try to demand your money back.
That was an
credits.
Awful film.
I think really you need to kind of be, it needs to be before the third act that you kind of walk out.
Yeah. There's no use kind of staying till the end of a Marvel film, watching this, you know, the little bit at the end, then turn around and say, that film was crap. Did you see the secret ending? Yeah, I did. I still think it's crap. You're not getting your money back. You watched it all.
But I'm afraid I think that is all we've got time for this week, gentlemen. I think it is really. We've kind of covered everything that we could potentially cover.
You sure?
Well, we didn't talk about telly much. Do we want to talk about telly for a minute?
Well, telly is easy enough, isn't it? Because you just don't watch the bloody thing again.
Yeah, I think TV suffers in a way that films don't, in a way, because they're longer and there's more of an investment in them. So, time investment anyway. So, say, for example, the amount of drop-offs that you get in viewing figures, you know, mid-season, can kind of indicate, you know, kind of there's a problem
and
there.
There's and there's obviously the having to instantly satisfy the expectations of advertisers that have paid for slots around a particular programme as well. So, yeah. But anyway, I do think that's all we've got time for this week, gentlemen.
Just a tiny bit on TV.
Yeah. So it's goodbye from...
Well, it's good night for me, Paul, a.k.a. one-armed underscore cookie on Twitter, and you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
Okay, it's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. I'm hopefully going to have a review of the Lift trousers up on thisismyjoystick.com in the very near future. You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, plus we're on Facebook and Google+, as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to visit hexdimension.com, because there's lots of cool stuff going up on there. I am particularly amazed by this lovely piece that Cookie's done on free-to-play games, which you should totally check out.
And don't forget, we are still looking for people.
Not amazed. I was amazed that it had the kind of depth that it does, because it was just kind of like a throwaway subject for me to kind of put it out there. And then you came back with just this amazing piece, and I was just like, wow.
How's that for admission? But yeah, anyway, we're still kind of hoping that you like our stuff and would consider writing or doing something for us.
Yeah, we don't do news.
Come join us
on the site. So, you know, you're not going to be like, oh, we want a feature and we want 20 news posts in 1 week. We don't do that.
No, we do, hey, do what you want, when you want, about what you want, and that's actually pretty much it, really, isn't it? So, yeah, it's very easy going.
Yeah. Good night.
Good night.
Night.